You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayrts.
Welcome in to News for Utah Plus today. This is our streaming show, IUPTV. We appreciate you being here. Obviously, if you're watching on YouTube or anywhere online, we welcome you as well. But go download the News for Utah Plus app because you can see this on Amazon Fire or Roku or Apple TV, wherever you stream. Just download the News for Utah Plus app. Joined today by a couple of Republicans. Fellas,
hey,
good to be with you.
Roll and smirk from Lindsay.
It takes two of us to balance you.
Listen, that was not a criticism.
Are you mansplaining to me right now?
Yeah, let me woman-splain to you what is going on right now. Sometimes our panel falls to two Republicans, but we love having the insights because we are in a Republican supermajority in Utah. So, you know, like we need to balance our congressional districts, we also need to balance our
We should really
shows.
Have another Republican here if we were going to balance.
Oh, because we're 3-1 Republicans to Democrats.
That's right.
Right. Okay, got it.
Great point, Taylor Morgan.
Taylor Morgan's here. Rusty Cannon's here. Hi, guys.
Hey. Hello.
Tell us who you are, what you do.
Rusty, go first.
Rusty Cannon. I'm with the Utah Credit Union Association. I do advocacy for them. And today, these are my opinions only, as I like to say.
And you used to be with the Taxpayers Association.
Used to be, yep.
Yeah. That's how I knew you, because I was like, tell me what this taxes means.
Taxes everywhere.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, thanks to Rusty for working on that for
thanks
so long.
Thanks for our
so,
low taxes.
Yes, Taylor Morgan, partner Morgan May Public Affairs. We do political campaigns, lobbying, consulting, all kinds of fun stuff.
Okay, perfect. So we're going to get to a little more than redistricting today. The last three episodes, if you watch the show with any regularity, they've been all redistricting, all half hour. So I am going to get to a little bit of other stuff today, but I'm going to start with redistricting. So we just barely, like in the last hour as we're recording this show, got a new timeline for Utah's congressional maps. If you're not up to speed on this, a third district judge has ordered the Utah legislature to draw new congressional maps because she ruled that Utah overturned a citizen ballot initiative creating anti-gerrymandering criteria that the legislature was supposed to follow. When they didn't do that, it was alleged and now ordered by a judge that they overturned that proposition. So, guys, this new timeline.
Well done, Lindsay Ayrts.
Did I summarize that?
Wow.
One?
Yes. Summary. Yeah.
Listen, I'm in news and words matter.
Yes.
Words are a thing. Okay, let me run through this new timeline for you. So the new timeline is September 25th. That's when the maps are due, okay?
They got one more day.
They got one extra day. I think the legislature's lawyers were complaining about like a full 30 days to actually draw these new maps. Mm. So they wanted that extra day to make it a full 30 days. The ruling came out on August 25th.
Perfect, so yeah.
There's that. The public can weigh in via Prop 4, which is now the law of the land. The maps have to be posted for 10 days before they can be voted on. So
public comment happens
until November 5th. And then on November 6th, that is the first day the legislature can vote on the maps. Now, I do want to say that they could post the maps at any time.
Yeah.
Right? They don't have to wait this 30 days to post them. They could post them anytime. And then
like late on a Friday afternoon going into the weekend.
Like Friday at 5 o'clock.
Why would one do that, Taylor Morgan Public Affairs?
Wait, yeah. I think we're going to get them on. No, that would be after the deadline. I'd say post them on general conference weekend, but that's after the deadline.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
That's my strategy.
Great idea.
Well, just a plug for the legislative website, le.utah.gov. If you're interested in all of these details and the maps, there are existing maps already on the legislative website. Yep. You can go and look at the commission recommended maps. If you want to nerd out on maps, there's no shortage of content online.
Yeah, and little birdies are telling me that the legislature already has the maps ready to go, do we think?
I think they're working hard. On
no comment.
Finalizing the maps.
No comment. No one's going to comment on that. Okay, so let's talk about sort of the judge's ruling here. What we haven't discussed on this show yet is that she also denied a request for a stay from the legislature. They wanted to pause this ruling, basically just citing that the people were going to be harmed if we don't get this right kind of thing. And the judge was like, I didn't err in my ruling, and she denied that stay. But she put a little interesting clause at the end of her ruling that I think a lot of Republicans are taking aim at and issue with. And I'm going to let Rusty go first after we look at this.
As you
this.
See me lift the paper to read such such language.
So the judge is talking about how Utah needs to be different when it comes to redistricting. And she says, while other states are currently redrawing their congressional plans to intentionally render some citizens' votes meaningless, Utah could redesign its congressional plan with an intention to protect its citizens' right to vote and ensure that each citizen's vote is meaningful. Rusty, I can see the steam coming out of your ears.
I mean,
why is this such an issue for you?
Okay, just go ahead and get rid of the judge robes and go run to be a state legislator. Like that.
You think this is a partisan statement?
I mean, seriously, if this were written by a legislator, I could understand. The point, though, with it being from a judge, the fact that she is saying things like this shows exactly what I think our point has been this whole time, is that this is completely agenda-driven, I think.
But why?
Well, because look what she says right there. She says, Utah could redesign its congressional plan with an intention to protect its citizens' right to vote. Whose right to vote is being taken away by the line going through Mill Creek? And then to ensure that each citizen's vote is meaningful. Please define that for me.
Well, she's arguing that the legislature overturned the proposition that created anti-gerrymandering rules.
But she's giving things that are undefinable. Make sure that your vote is meaningful.
Is she going to rule against the Electoral College? Is that ruling coming?
Yeah. I mean, so I vote for Congressional District 1 instead of 2. Does that make my vote more meaningful? I think this is complete garbage. I think she's totally shown her cards that she has an agenda.
Well,
I think this is not the role of a judge. This is the role of a legislator.
She's hinting that she believes it's gerrymandered.
Yeah.
Because she's saying some votes don't matter.
But
okay, so if you go make a donut hole, it's gerrymandered the other way. Like, yeah. I honestly think after reading this, it would not shock me at the end of all this, she throws whatever the legislature goes out and says, no, I think this map's fair, and oh, it's the one with the donut hole. Wouldn't surprise me at all.
Well, to the point earlier that we were talking about this new schedule, on October 23rd and 24th, there will be an evidentiary hearing.
Ooh,
so once
yes.
the legislature makes its new maps public and they're posted for 10 days, then the lawyers get to brief and make their arguments about why these maps do or don't, if there are any objections to them, follow the criteria of Proposition 4, which is you got to follow city-county lines as much as you can. You can't cut through cities. You got to try to keep communities of interest together. You can't slice a city in half, basically. So some of this anti-gerrymandering criteria that Prop 4 came up with.
You've got to slice somewhere.
That's my point.
You got to create boundaries.
Yeah.
And right now, Utah's four congressional districts are all very balanced. They all have approximately a quarter Democrats, and then around 40 to 50% Republicans.
They're all proportionally
similar. I thought the way the maps were drawn with that four corners in Mill Creek, I thought that was brilliant because it balances urban and rural and it gives those voters a voice and it balances all kinds of voters proportionally across the districts.
So why shouldn't we have districts that kind of center around, like, you know, rural interest in particular, like one congressperson that does rural issues, one congressperson that does more urban issues, you know, kind of make it that way as opposed to this urban rural.
Our state isn't divided that way.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Senator Sandel said it good on your show the other day, was well said about the federal lands issue, so much of it there. It makes complete sense, with Utah at least, to have a member of Congress have a diverse set of constituents that deal with all of those issues because then you give a balanced view. It just makes no sense to go the other way. I think you make a very credible case that the way we do it is good. And to Taylor's point, the current map is a phenomenal map. It is really well done. It checks all the boxes that a typical map should check. But they're just people that don't like it because they don't have their donut hole.
Well, yeah. One of the clear criteria of Prop 4 was that it doesn't cut a city.
That's impossible.
But why is that a meaningful boundary?
You could still go along the border of Mill Creek, and as opposed to cutting through it.
Okay, but that moves it like four blocks. Who cares?
Right, but that's the criteria. That's the criteria voters approved.
The criteria is wrong. It's a flawed criteria. You cannot land and fulfill all the definitions that Prop 4 has.
Well, some
of these definitions haven't really been defined.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think we're working through this. You know, I live in Draper, at the southern edge of Salt Lake County. And a good portion of Draper City is in Utah County. Mm-hmm. And so if we were to create a Salt Lake County congressional district, we're cutting cities in half. It's almost unavoidable. That is not a really reliable or meaningful measure. And again, by law, by federal law and Prop 4 now, which is statute for this, the legislature is not allowed to look at party registration when they're drawing these maps. That cannot be part of the process. And so I think, you know, again,
maybe
I think
the legislature can't, but other groups can.
Of course.
But there's a map that does what
right,
you want.
Right, but the judge should not ask for that. She should not consider party registration as part of this. And let's be clear again, she did not rule on gerrymandering.
No, she didn't. One
has proven that anyone has been harmed by gerrymandering in Utah. Right?
Yeah, that's right.
If you want to call gerrymandering, look at the legislative maps that Republican and Democratic leadership drew together.
Yeah.
They're called incumbent protection.
Are those gerrymandered?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, a gerrymander to protect incumbents.
Okay, and that was one of the criteria of Prop 4. Don't do that. Which is
But nobody's talking about those, and the legislature doesn't have to touch them.
Which is kind of the question. I mean, I think we've talked about this before. Nobody sued over them, right? The only maps that were challenged in this ruling were the congressional maps. However, because they were overturned on Prop 4's criteria, because the legislature violated Prop 4... Not because of how they were drawn. Yeah.
Can I just make an important point here?
Then you could challenge.
When the legislature drew these congressional maps, they gave a huge gift to Better Boundaries, a huge gift to the plaintiffs of this lawsuit. By putting that Four Corners in Mill Creek, they created this opposition. They created this lawsuit. Just the political perception, like the public opinion. It's problematic. And a lot of credit to the plaintiffs and to Better Boundaries on this. They've held press conferences standing on those corners. You know, they've brought in individual citizen plaintiffs who live in that area. That, to me, I don't know if the legislature, if that was them poking or they just didn't think it would be a problem. But the optics of that, it's a huge gift to the plaintiffs.
Yeah. I mean, and back to the ruling, like she talked about, you know, I'm going to quote her again. While other states are currently redrawing their congressional plans to intentionally render some citizen votes meaningless. I mean, really? Are you going to go make that claim in Massachusetts like I talked about last time? 0 of 9 congressional seats in Massachusetts are held by Republicans. They got 36% of the vote. Are you going to go make that same argument there? I just think that paragraph right there showed her cards. She's forgetting that she's a judge and she's trying to be a legislator, and I think it's wrong.
Okay. So do you think there's any appetite from the legislature to impeach Judge Gibson? Because as you're saying, Russ, you're kind of saying she's being activist, if you will, there.
I think going down that road would be a waste of time.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I know that some conversations have happened. Impeaching this judge doesn't undo the ruling. And it just makes the legislature look punitive.
Yeah,
I don't think they'll do that. I think they're going to submit maps and move forward. And to be clear, I think Judge Gibson is eminently qualified for her position. I think that she has maybe had a bad bedside manner in how she's handled this case. I think she has come across as a partisan and come across as an activist. And I'm not saying she is any of those, but I'm saying the legislature, well, this statement here, right? The legislature can easily.
Y'all were calling her that before this statement came out.
Right. Yes.
You're calling her an activist because you didn't like the ruling.
Well, no, I'm definitely not on her Christmas card list at this point, but I think to get on more or less Christmas card list, I think the Senate needs to do a better job to speak to this of vetting judges. Those types of things are typically rubber stamped.
Saying you want a judge to lean the other way.
Well, no. What I want them to do is a better job of vetting judges that come to the state Senate and just get rubber stamped.
Yeah.
It just because I have never seen opposition on any of these. This is a long-term conversation. If they need to do a better job of really being careful about who they allow to be appointed as into a judgeship.
This is so hard because this Supreme Court ruling back in July that allowed this case to even go to Judge Gibson, that was unanimous. Mm-hmm. And that Supreme Court in the past recent history has been very pro-legislature. So we're living in a tumultuous time in Utah politics, perhaps a very exciting time. I think it's really interesting. I hope people follow it in a meaningful way and don't just get caught up in the name calling. You know, and I didn't mean to call her an activist. I meant to that.
And nobody used that word. I did.
Statements like this one in her last order make it easy for Republicans to say that, right?
Yeah. Right.
Instead of activist, I would say legislating from the bench. That's the term that I think of.
Yeah. And because she's picking the maps, is that another example of how you
if
think
she did?
She is picking the maps.
Well, she said in her hearings that, like, this isn't my job, legislature do it.
Right.
I don't buy it. I think at the end of this, I think she totally puts her thumb on this.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see. I mean, so long as the legislature's maps don't violate Prop 4, then those maps will stand.
But you can never obey a Prop 4, is my point.
Well, if we were going on Prop 4 language, it would be a commission drawing these maps,
right?
Well,
the commission didn't have to exist anymore because once there was an injunction, the lawyer said the injunction triggers new standards.
A hot mess. This is just, it's bonkers.
We will see. Yeah. We will see how it all shakes out. Okay, speaking of the Utah Supreme Court, I want to talk about new nominees that we have on the court. Right now, there are 7 justices. Is that right?
Seven.
Five.
We were going to five on the state court. Yeah.
Five on the state court. Three of them are women right now. Mm-hmm. There was a story from the Salt Lake Tribune that pointed out, and we all saw this, that the all seven nominees for the vacancy for Justice John Pierce are men. What do you guys make of that? Is there anything to read into that?
Well, only two of the 19 applicants were women. Hmm. There are three women who sit on the nominating committee who sent the final names to the Senate for recommendation. It's so easy to claim that, you know, this is sexist, but if you really understand what's happening and how it happened, I think, this is name-calling. This is politicizing the process from the left. And, you know, the Salt Lake Tribune appears to be doing their dirty work these days. Yeah. Bless them. But there's nothing to this. And for the record, Judge Gibson was not one of the female applicants.
This time around.
Yes, correct.
She has been in the past.
Correct, yes. Yeah.
So clearly, somebody thought she was a qualified enough judge to be on the state Supreme Court, but you're disagreeing with that now.
Republican senators in the last couple of weeks, they've all kind of said the same thing to me as I've talked to them about this. And they all said that when Judge Gibson came before them as a nominee and when they confirmed her, they all thought she was eminently qualified, that she would be a terrific judge. But nobody has a crystal ball. And really, we can't be deciding. I'm glad that senators voted her in.
Yeah.
Because even though they couldn't predict what would happen, I think, you know, this is what judges do.
But we don't really know if she's right yet. We need the Supreme Court to tell us.
And maybe the federal Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. So we need those higher courts to tell us if she's indeed right. But
I think the issue is a non-issue, a yawn.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just pushing discrimination one way or the other. I mean, it's merit is what should matter. The statue in front of the Supreme Court, I don't know if it's Lady Justice, whatever you call it, she's wearing a blindfold for a reason, mm-hmm. right? In this case, it should be the same way.
Yeah.
The applicant is the applicant. If they're qualified and they have merit, it should not matter.
Yeah. So you guys think the Salt Lake Tribune here was just stirring up
Absolutely.
Dirt by pushing this out this
yes.
way?
Yes.
Are you serious? The Tribune did that?
Well, they're not wrong. They're not reporting anything inaccurate.
No, but that's the Tribune.
The headline creates a perception of bad behavior, mm-hmm. right, by the legislature and even by the governor.
Yeah.
That's what they're getting at.
Okay, interesting. All right, I want to talk about one federal issue that I haven't really seen that much hubbub about, but when I saw this come through my inbox, I was like, oh, why do we need this? Senator Mike Lee is proposing that we change the Department of Defense to the Department of War, which it has been in the past mm-hmm. for a lot of years. Do we need this change? What does this do? What are the pros and cons here, guys?
I'm going to defer to Rusty on this.
This reminds me of the Gulf of America thing.
Yeah.
Can we move on to the next thing? I mean, I get the point, but if I were advising the president, I would say, if you want to do this, do it, make a short statement and be done with it. Don't hold a press conference and just go on about how the best economy ever. And I'm just, you know, and it's the department. Just do it, make the statement and be done with it. I think that says more than anything.
Yeah.
This is much ado about nothing. I mean,
can I just say,
it should be the Department of War, but do I care? No.
I'm so happy that the senior senator from Utah is doing this instead of something terrible.
Mm.
So let him spend his time doing silly things like this. And I think it'll avoid a lot of trouble for all of us.
Why is this silly?
Because it is. It's a name change.
Yeah, it means absolutely
nothing. Yeah.
It doesn't change how the Department of Defense operates. It doesn't. I mean, what is his justification for needing?
Well, if you think about it, I thought about this morning as we were discussing these topics. It should probably be Department of War. I mean, we're not going to be attacked at this point. Department of War, it's not really Department of Defense. We would probably be doing the attacking.
I think a lot of countries around the world suddenly get real nervous if it's Department of War.
And maybe that's the point.
You know, it seems, quite aggressive, very hawkish, you know, and unnecessary. I mean, can you even begin to think about how many acronyms would have to be changed everywhere in the
right.
Pentagon, in the Rayburn building? I mean, it would probably cost $500 billion just to update the acronym.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm not happy he's doing this.
The acronym
I take it back is
in everything.
Yes.
Okay, we'll see if that actually makes its way. It's kind of one of those things, I think, where he likes to do his bills with a big, long acronym, like the Houses Act, and they've all got abbreviations and stuff like that. Maybe everybody does that.
Great acronyms in Congress.
Yeah.
Who is there
making Department of Defense Department of War. What is that acronym right there? I can't
think. MADOD.
Can't do acronyms on the fly.
Mike Lee's bills tend to have a big long acronym that they came up with.
Oh, well, they all do.
Yeah. Maybe it's not just Mike Lee.
There's probably a department of acronyms in the government somewhere.
If there isn't, there should be.
Let's be honest. Mike Lee wants to be appointed to the Supreme Court.
Okay.
And he is just making sure President Trump doesn't forget about him.
Yeah.
Well, and one thing I will offer here real quick that we hadn't mentioned in this conversation, this DOD rename thing, it did start with President Trump. About a week prior to Senator Lee introducing this legislation, President Trump had expressed an interest in changing the name back to the Department of War. So I think this can be seen as Mike Lee showing, I'm responsive to the president's interests and demands. If he says he wants to do it, let me be the senator that puts my name on starting that right now.
So Taylor,
which would not be the first
Peter.
Time.
Yeah, that's good to know.
Taylor, if you were a senator and the president called, President Trump called you and said, I'd like you to take care of that for me, would you say yes?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And not only yes, it's a yes, sir.
Yeah, in defense
yes,
of Senator
Mr. President.
Lee, if that happened, I wouldn't blame
absolutely.
Him for saying, I'll work on it today.
Just doing what the president says.
Yeah, he's got interns.
Yeah.
Somebody could do that.
D-O-W. Come up with it. Yeah. Just make it a thing.
Dow.
All right. We've got 3 minutes left, so I want to just hit this final topic really quickly. Yesterday, the Utah Attorney General's office and our good friend Derek Brown announced that Utah has a settlement with the major operator of Pornhub. So this is Aleo. They operate about 100 adult content websites. And Utah's Attorney General and their office, together with the FTC, are claiming that... that this adult content site put child sex abuse material and non-consensual stuff on their website. So basically like spy cams and things like that where people didn't know they were being filmed, right? And other maybe people who are underage on their website, right? And not taking that down. So this is a $5 million settlement. We'll get an initial $5 million up front. And then if Aleo breaks any of these rules that the Utah Attorney General's office has laid out, then they got to pay another $10 million more. So Utah could see a good chunk of change.
I love this. Love this, and I'm so proud of Attorney General Derek Brown and the governor and others. Utah's really led out on this issue. No one else in the country has gone after these porn operators, has gone after, you know, youth and mental health on social media. Utah's been the leader on these things. And finally, someone is holding these porn sites accountable for that kind of content. You know, free speech is free speech and all, but when it involves crimes and exploiting of children and people not knowing, I'm glad Utah's doing something about it.
Yeah, and Utah already has some age verification laws, right, that we put into place. And actually, Pornhub was one of the sites that went dark in Utah.
Yeah, I was going to mention this. Yeah. For those that don't remember, this is the one that was flipped off. It's still off, as far as I know, in Utah. So it's,
here, let me look right now.
Yeah, can you search that?
I'm not
we're
going
all
to test
to report
you,
on this
you
story.
Do have to jump off of the station Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're all like, wait, we need to check if this is still
incognito.
Online.
Yeah, here we go.
Incognito mode. But yeah, we have these age verification laws. And so my question for the Attorney General yesterday and other people's questions were really, you know, are Utahns being harmed by this? They can't even get on the site. So like what defense?
Well,
do
but I think it's the message that's sent is to Taylor's point that Utah taking the leading role in this is good. Holding them accountable is a good thing. I think if there's monetary damages, so be it.
And that's probably the only way to force change when it comes to these, you know, porn companies is to hit their pocketbook.
Yeah.
Right. That's the only thing that will really make a difference. And someone here is holding them accountable. Probably need to do a lot more.
Attorney General Derek Brown also said at the press conference yesterday, he was like, go home and tell your kids to be smarter online. And I was like, I have a 10-year-old girl at home and it's really hard to report on these stories and hear this type of stuff is out there on the internet. And
I think kids need to know.
Yeah.
We got to talk to our kids about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
And they need to know about it from us rather than their friends.
I know. And my daughter literally brought home a computer from school yesterday and texted me and said, Mom, what's the Wi-Fi password? And I was like, no, I'm not ready for this.
Don't even start on the Chrome book controversy Draper.
Yeah, you had this happen.
I've heard about this.
This is a big deal. We don't have time.
We
don't
have
time.
10 seconds left.
Is this different than the upside pineapples and Draper? Is it different?
Slightly, but...
This is Chromebook and Draper allowed some stuff to get through, right?
And
still
is not filtering content these kids should not be looking at.
Okay, but wasn't it like an art class or something that showed like some French paintings with women...
Yes.
Bare-chested.
Yes, some bare-chested women in French art. In fact, I believe I walked past this piece of art in the Louvre.
Right?
Right, just a couple months ago.
And you took your kids there.
And my kids were there with me, and I, you know, look, it's a controversy. I don't know what side I'm on.
Yeah.
But it's a It's a lot.
But maybe the Chromebook.
Grab your Stanley mug, okay?
Yeah.
And sit down and Google.
I think the less I say on the subject, the better.
Okay, there we go. All right. Taylor Morgan, Rusty Cannon, thanks so much for your insights today. We talked about a lot of things. We appreciate it. As always, you can watch Inside Utah Politics on ABC4 Sundays at 8 and 4. And then this show airs Tuesdays and Thursdays. We have new content for you twice a week. So we're always up to speed on Utah's political headlines. Producer Peter, thank you for all your button pushing.
Always happy to push the buttons
back
here.
Appreciate you. And obviously your knowledge and facts. You do a lot more than button pushing, let's be honest. We will see you
next time.
Next week. Yes.